Maryam yasmachanirgatam Tadhyanavrittarupatvam Nanirodhosi putrachi Jagrata devi vedeti Tadabhine prasarpati Nivartate nijanaiva Svabhavadrupalakrita Aham sukhi cha dukhi cha Rakshasya ityadi samvida Sukhadya vastanu syute Vartante nyatrata sutam Na dukham na sukham yatra Na grahyam grahakam na cha Na rasti mudha bhavopi Tadasti paramartataha Yata karana vargoyam Vimudho mudha vasrayam Sahantarena chakrena Pravritti siddhi samriti Labhate tat prayatnena Pariksham tatvam adara Yata svatantra tatasya Sarvatriyam akritrima Nahi chano danasyayam Prerakatvena vartate Api tvatma balat pasha Purushasta samodhave Nita sudhya samartasya Karta vishwabhilasina Yada kshobha pralieta Tadasyat paramam padam Tadasyakritrimo dharmo Nyatva kartritva lakshana Yatastadipsitam sarvam Janati cha karoti cha Tamadhishtha vibhavena Svabhavam avalokayan Mayamanaivaste Yastasyeyam kushti kuta Nabhavo bhavyatameti Nachatasradhimurhata Yato bhiyoga samsparsha Tadasiditi nishchaya Atasatritrimam yeyam Sausukta padavastada Natvevam smaryamanatvam Tatvatvam pratipadyate Avastayugalam chatra Karyakartritvashabditam Karyatakshayini tatra Sakritvam punarakshayam Karyamukha prayatnoya Kevalam sotra lupyate Tasmin lupte vinuptosmi Kya buddha pratipadyate Natu yo antarmukho bhava Sarvanyatva gunastaram Tasya lopa kadachitya Anyasya nupalambana Sarvyopalabhisarapam Tripadavyabhisharini Nityam syatsu prabuddhasya Tadadhyam te parasyatu Jnananyeya svarupinya Sakya paramaya प्रबुधधियस्वेते स्वस्तिति स्तगनोधय पतयन्ति दुरुतारे घोरे संसारवत्मनि अतः सततमुद्युक्तः स्पन्दतत्त्वविविक्तये जाग्रदेव निजं भावम् अच्युरेणाधिगच्छति अतिक्रुध प्ररुष्टो वा किं करोमीति वामशन् धावन्मायास्पदं गच्छे तत्र स्पन्दा प्रतिष्ठितः यामवस्थां समालम्ब्य यदयं मामवक्षति तदवश्यं करिष्येऽहम् इति सङ्कल्पतिष्ठति सामर्शित्योर्ध्वमार्गेण चन्द्रसूर्याभुभावति सौषुम्ने ध्वन्यसमितो हित्वा भ्रमन्दगोचरम् तदा तस्मिन् महाव्योमि.
Good afternoon. What we were just listening to, as some of you may know and some of you may not know, was the chanting of the Spandakarikas, which is a recording that one of the students in the first teleclass I ever gave on the Spandakarikas, which was in 2006 during a year-long class called The Transformative Journey. And one of the things we did in our in-person retreats was chant the Spandakarikas, and this woman made a CD of it for us to chant with, and I was actually going to, with Deb's grace, put it up on the class website so that anyone who would like to chant with these verses can use this as a guide. The pronunciation is not 100%, but it's got the shakti of the Spandakarikas. And that's especially true when you listen to it on a better sound system. So welcome, and it's beautiful to be with you again and to have the chance to have a conversation in the form of Q&A. So I'd like to start, as we always do, by chanting the Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundaye Vijay Swaha mantras. I also want to tell you that this week is the beginning of the Diwali celebrations, and they culminate on Saturday with the traditional Lakshmi Puja, and which is also the day of, you know, the Indian New Year, the Indian Diwali, that has now become an international celebration. But for those of you who like to do goddess practice and especially Lakshmi practice, this is the week, and Saturday is the day when you begin to create your, let's call it, offerings and prayers to the goddess of good fortune and auspiciousness, so that she'll be present with you in whatever form she chooses throughout the year to come. And the process of welcoming Lakshmi, welcoming the goddess of abundance, is to put lights in your windows, and they can be electric lights. The tradition, of course, is to put candles in the windows, in every window. And it's also the time in India, traditionally the time of autumn cleaning. So people actually scrub their houses from top to bottom in order to welcome Lakshmi, since spick and span is one of Lakshmi's mantras. But what's most important, really, is to just have the bhavana, the feeling of being willing and ready to welcome auspiciousness into your house and into your life, even more than usual in the next few days. So if you want to follow the Lakshmi tradition, I'm going to send out a little notification about the celebrations on different days, which most of us won't get into. But there's one particular day that's a really good day for house cleaning, and I believe that day is tomorrow. So those of you who have been waiting to do your house cleaning for an auspicious day, or who just want to do your house cleaning with the remembrance of Lakshmi, I will let you know what the auspicious time there is. This cleaning ceremony, which is kind of what it is based on a myth about that's from the Devi Mahatmayam, about Krishna destroying a demon who was called Naraka Asura, whose name means the dirt demon. So it's a piece of the holiday devoted to hygiene. So anyway, we'll chant Om Aim Hrim Klim 5 times, and then the first verse of Spandakarikas once, and then I would love to receive your questions. Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundaye Viche Swaha. 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 One more time. Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundaye Viche Swaha. And one run through of the first verse of the Spandakarikas. Yasyonme shani me shabhyam jagata pralayodayau tam shakti chakra vibhava prabhavam shankaram stumaha. And since we are together in this auspicious space of virtual Spanda Satsang, let's just take a moment and turn our awareness to the breath, which is, of course, the place where Spanda vibrates most apparently for most of us. So feeling the body as though, for the first time, as though you were a newborn, with no concepts about this is my body and this is a chair and this is the air. Begin to feel into the sensations that you're aware of. Perhaps the sensation of your buttocks, the sensations in your shoulders or in your tummy. I know I'm giving you geographical instructions, but just notice how your awareness can move through the tapestry of sensations and really center itself on the experience of sensation, which really is one of the most powerful and immediate ways we can become present to Spanda Shakti, because the real felt experience of sensation is of its pulsation. In the experience of sensation, we naturally become aware of the way in which Spanda vibrates, pulsing at different levels of intensity. the very sensations of your body are aspects of your sacredness. And in this field of sensation, just begin to feel the breath flowing in through the front of the body, through the skin in front of the body. Flowing in over the whole surface of this body of sensation. With the recognition that even when we feel that we ourselves are exercising the lungs and the diaphragm to bring the breath in and push it out, the truth is that it's she who's breathing us. And you can bring your breath, or bring your awareness of breath back to its, let's say, normal level, where the breath is just coming and going without you necessarily being aware of it. Or you can stay with the feeling, the felt sensation of being breathed. And we're now going to open the floor to questions. My suggestion is that the questions be about practice, about the awareness understanding. And if you have a very personal question, it's also okay to email me with it. And if it's a personal question that you have an intuition that others will want to hear the answer to, by all means, ask it. And I also understand that many of our practice questions and understanding questions present themselves through the voice of our actual experience or confusion about experience or excitement about experience. So please feel free to ask those questions as well. And if you want to raise your hand, you can press star 2 and Deb will calling you. Question. So,
we've got someone that's opened up. I'm not sure. I have no city or state. So,
okay.
If you've asked a question, please say something and hopefully you'll. We've got you unmuted.
Hi, Sally.
Hi. Who's this?
This is Lauren Palmer from Somerville.
Hi, Lauren.
I have a question.
To hear your voice.
Thank you. Great to hear you. I have a question about comfort and discomfort. You know, there's the famous Christmas carol that says, "Tidings of comfort and joy." And I know there's the Satchitananda, which is, you know, the bliss consciousness. But I'm wondering, I sort of live in a continual state of discomfort. Not totally, but transitions are always discomfortable, getting up from a comfortable seat, comfortable meditation, getting into a cold shower, having to do, you know, something that I'm not really totally behind. And so there's sort of this continual discomfort. Is there some part of the practice that will alleviate that, or is that something that I just have to accept as the path?
Well, That is a great question. I think in the realm of discomfort, I would put sensitivity, anxiety, social awkwardness, which is something that a lot of us feel at times. This experience of discomfort is one of the it's one of the experiences of what the scripture is called dukkha. The word dukkha actually means the creaking of a chariot wheel. You know, back in the day when transportation was on bullock carts and chariots, and the wheels would creak. So dukkha actually means the creakiness of our self meeting the environment. And, you know, as Buddha says, life is suffering and there's a path out of suffering. So the feeling of discomfort for people who are self-aware and sensitive is often feels like it becomes more acute as we start to practice. There's actually a statement in the Yoga Sutras which says that the yogi's being is as sensitive as an eyeball. So many things that you wouldn't notice if your awareness was less delicate become very very visible to you. So that said, in many respects, the feeling of discomfort is an aspect of sensitivity. Now, in terms of the path out of discomfort, aside from the many modalities that there are to kind of bring our physical body to make our physical body feel more at ease, including, you know, really paying attention to the breath, paying attention to our need for exercise, paying attention to diet, actually taking inner body scans, which is, I don't know how many of you do this, but I often find it very useful when I'm feeling out of sorts to just close my eyes, imagine my eyeballs and my hearing turning inside, and just notice what's going on in the body. Very often there's a holding or a tension that you can work with by, you know, gripping, you know, like tightening and loosening or breathing into the discomfort. And I'm sure, Loring, that you know all these strategies and have many others. But in terms of the fundamental teaching of the Spandakarikas, essentially what really starts to make the difference is to begin to be able to see the action of Spanda inside the discomfort. In other words, not to add that other layer of making it wrong or thinking that it should be different or trying to make it go away, but actually being willing to say to yourself, all right, this is how the Shakti is vibrating. This is how Spanda is pulsing in me now. And maybe I have a story about it that translates to this discomfort. Maybe if I let go of that story, it'll just be, you know, a certain level of intensity. Maybe what I want to do is re-identify myself with sensation itself or with the witness consciousness. What I'm saying is that this is your path, as it is for many of us. I don't think there's anyone who doesn't learn at some point to make discomfort or anxiety a signal for inner work. But I can tell you from my own experience that practicing with discomfort or practicing with anxiety or practicing with fear, especially practicing with it, with seeing it as a particular energy vibration of Spanda, actually starts to... perhaps soothe is the right word, but make you more and more conscious of the actual blissfulness beneath the discomfort. Discomfort is actually a sign that in some way you've turned away from yourself, and this is the human experience, you know, to turn away from ourselves. So the more we turn towards the self and make space for the discomfort, you know, literally feel as though your consciousness is holding the discomfort, the more the molecules or the neuronal wiring of discomfort begins to resolve itself. So I hope that helps. I often have wished that somehow the Shakti could take away all the sources of disease, discomfort, you know, that the gnarlier parts of what we call our ego. I wish that she could just take it away in the middle of the night while we're sleeping. And some of it she does. But to some extent, we get to practice with with those forms of suffering that we become aware of and recognize her in them. And then use that recognition to empower the liberating aspect of the spanda to begin to disentangle the knots.
Amen.
Amen, Loring. Thank you so much for that question.
Thank you, and I hope you'll continue to teach us.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. Deb?
Okay, the next person we have is from New Mexico.
So, yes, so from Albuquerque.
Yes. Right. Okay, Sally.
Hi,
Sally. This is Nella. I'm no longer in New Mexico, but...
Okay.
Anyway, it's been an amazing course, so thank you so much. There's so much I'd like to say about the experiences. And an interesting thing is I've been in the process of relocating. I still sort of am, but during this course. And every session I was listening in some sort of a noisy condition. It was in some temporary places or side of the road or God knows what. And to my amazement, the experiences were still very deep. So sensitive to noise, I can't stand it, and I'm distracted, and all of a sudden, it wasn't really a problem.
Wow.
So it's one of the, and I had this expansive awareness, and I was driving through the seedy parts of Portland where I am now, absolutely hating it, and at one point, all of a sudden, it was expanded awareness, and the universe was perfect for an hour driving through that same city part of town.
Mm.
So there were quite a few other amazing experiences as well. And interesting point is when I was down and sad and during the Lakshmi class and I couldn't concentrate, I couldn't find a place to live, all of a sudden in the middle I got a call that the place I wanted is mine.
Oh, wow. Oh. Don't we love those miracles?
And I couldn't believe it. And still now I've been okay, and now I have a completely different question about practice. And but this discomfort sets in because feeling well and feeling good and happy for some reason isn't in my habit. And I go back to some sort of discomfort or I start behaving in a ways which are not productive or supportive. And I also am sitting with that discomfort now, I still want to ask you the real question, though. Never mind the discomfort. So there's two. One, if you can, perhaps, I don't know how is it possible. It seems to me that the concept or experience of awareness, it eludes me. I can be this whole beautiful, huge awareness field and, you know, see some undulations, or I can be the spaciousness, I can be, you know, the presence that is there very strongly. I don't understand what awareness means. So that's one question. Let me give you another one. Another one is about the practice. So sometimes I can repeat mantra for hours, especially when I'm driving. And sometimes I can't even say it two times when I woke up. And I wonder what's could be in a way? What's driving that? What, you know, what can I focus? What am I missing? What, is it okay? You know, yeah, let's be okay. But anyway.
Okay. Yes. Great questions. I'm going to answer the second one first, because the answer is very simple. One of the reasons why I really believe in giving a kind of a quiverful of practices is because there are going to be times when a particular practice just doesn't feel possible. It doesn't, you know, it feels dry. It feels, you can't find the shakti in it. You can't find the juice in it. You just don't feel like it. So, and that's why it's really good to have several practices that you've worked with, and you can kind of move around and see, okay, so what does have some juice for me now? You know, if it doesn't feel like I can say the mantra, if I'm not into the mantra, then what is it exactly? Maybe I want to look at, maybe it's about looking at the light on the trees, and maybe it's about feeling into my body for its sensations. Maybe it's about just allowing the breath to flow. In other words, don't worry if a practice is not feeling like something you want to practice right now. The important thing is that there be something that you're willing to practice now. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's not,
yes,
it's
yes.
not what you practice, it's that you practice.
Yes, yes, thank you. And that was a very important part of the class last week. It was very clear that this is okay. That's okay.
Yeah, it is okay. It is okay. I was trained in a tradition in which mantra was the main practice, and I love mantra, but there will always be these moments when pretty much everybody would kind of lose the juice of the mantra, and what I learned as a teacher in that tradition and also as a student. Was simply to not put all my eggs in the basket of one practice for exactly that reason, you know. But to know that I can always become the witness, I can always become aware of the breath. I can always just open my awareness. So that brings me to your first question. It sounds to me like what you said was that I can be this awareness. I can be this presence. I can feel this awareness that holds everything. That is what awareness of awareness is. In other words, it's not a practice where you screw your mind around to see if you can see something that is invisible, has no qualities, that totally eludes you, so that you're using your attention to chase awareness. In fact, awareness is what you already are. It's already present. It's what allows you to be aware of everything and to just kind of settle back and become present to that knowingness. I mean, awareness is the word we use for it. The attention, one of my favorite contemporary Buddhist teachers calls the cognizing quality in the mind. That subtle capacity for knowing things, for knowing ourselves and other things, to just tune into what is it that knows. That's another way of being aware of awareness. I like to use the phrase become aware of awareness because it was a phrase that kind of popped me into, it sort of pops me into the experience. But what we all have to do is find a way to become present to that which is actually already present, which is the background, which is the capacity in us for awakeness, for aliveness, and really more settle into it rather than trying to focus on it. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And there are a whole bunch of words that people are using, and I'm trying to apply it to my experience. It's confusing.
Yeah. Well,
like
what word?
Awareness and,
consciousness, another one.
yeah. spaciousness versus awareness, and you know, where we go with that, silence versus awareness, and where we go with that.
Well,
yes,
you know, we're. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that sometimes it's just confusing. I can be in the state, but then when I try to talk to others or kind of explain my experience, I get lost.
I think it is very hard to talk about that experience to people who aren't familiar with it, because it's a wonderful experience.
No, people here, with people, just to exchange notes, so to speak, it's very difficult.
Well, maybe the effort of trying to put into words something that is fundamentally wordless is one of the ways that you can bring yourself closer to it. You know what I mean? I know for me, trying to wrap words around something that is not susceptible to words has always been a very good exercise, because it makes me pay more attention to what it is that I'm experiencing. And this isn't true for everybody. Some people get bollocks by trying to use words. But, you know, on another level, I know that you're in that experience a lot of the time. So maybe in those moments when you feel confused, just to remember, okay, what knows that I'm confused, and be present in it, and let it find the words for you. You know, there's a kind of a trust that we learn, that the knowingness, the Shakti, the Spanda, actually does have the appropriate words if we can just lean back into it. So, and you're a very, you know, deeply conscious person, so I know you know what I mean.
Well, thank you, Sally. Thank you. It's a really amazing class. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and thank you. Thank you, everyone. Hi, guys. Deb, we have another couple of hands raised.
We have a question from Sharon. She's on the webcast, and she asked perhaps a little more information about the energy healer Holer sees himself as just the conduit of the divine feminine, and oftentimes Mary Magdalene is one of his guides. Fits with your teaching, my yoga teacher's teaching, a student of yours, of the presence of the divine feminine. Thank you for any thoughts. I'm going
to
text it to you too.
So, yeah, text it to me. Are you... A little information. The energy healer Holer sees himself as I'm not completely clear about your question, whether you're talking about a specific person or about a general experience. So I'm going to assume, and you can write in another part of the message if I'm not answering your question. First of all, there are a lot of people in the world.
I messed up. Apparently, I asked the wrong question first.
I was
getting a note from Sharon. The first question, I'm sorry, I looked at the time stamp wrong. It says, how, if at all, is Spanda Shakti related to energy healing via sometimes chakras? I've had astonishing results working in energy healing, and the vibration of the universe caught my eye. I'm sorry, Sharon, about the mix-up on the timing. So that was her first question.
Okay, great. I had a feeling that was what you were getting at.
I apologize.
No. It's good. So energy healing clearly makes use of one of the aspects of Spanda Shakti, which is healing. And there are a lot of ways to see energy healing. For example, people who are very sensitive to energies and presences in, you know, in the what's often called the astral world, in the realms, the invisible realms that actually do interpenetrate the physical realm. There are unquestionably many forms of energy and intelligence that we don't see, but which we can often feel. And there's an entire study of subtle astral presences and how to tune into them. You know, many people call them, you know, call these presences, or let's say are aware of these presences as very specific guides. I have this experience myself quite often, although they never show up as, I never see them. But there, you know, I have become more and more aware of energies, particularly energies I identify as goddess energies or different deity energies, that through mantra or through meditation or invocation, I feel very present in the field, and I know many of you have that experience as well. So at certain points, certain people, and I know there are many of you who have these gifts on the call, certain people do experience energies flowing through their hands or flowing through their prayers and being healing to ourselves and others. And these are, you know, in light of the whole conversation about siddhis that was going on in the listserv, these are actually very specific siddhis, siddhi meaning attainment or gift in the Christian tradition, in the Catholic tradition, and in the Episcopal tradition, the Anglican tradition, they're called charisms, familiar word now, you know, which literally the word charis in Greek means gift. So in our practice, and sometimes apparently with no practice, energetic gifts are given to us or come through us, and then we get to work with them. And that, of course, is the, let's call it the test or the practice. So when you feel energy flowing, coming through you and being helpful to others, my feeling about it is that it's very, very important to, first of all, recognize that it's not ours, and to offer it, to constantly offer it back to the source. Spanda Shakti, as we've been saying throughout the class, is present in everything and is creatively present in everything. And what that means is that incredible healing and transformation is possible. Once we learn how to, I feel like it's like there's this place that you can get into when you're internally focused in an innocent way with a wish or a blessing or an affirmative prayer, and there are moments when you just feel yourself connecting to that force that is able to make the physical realm respond to your prayer or to your direction of energy. It's possible to learn how to do this. You know, there are schools of energy healing around, as many of you know. Some of them are very very pure and very beautiful. There are also approaches to energy healing that become problematic, and the reason that they become, there's a couple of reasons. One is that when we're doing energetic work over a period of time, it becomes extremely important to get our personal sense of doership out of the way. And this is not that easy a thing to do. You know, it takes a lot of practice to not feel like the doer. And when our personal sense of doership is still present, like when we feel even partially it's my responsibility to heal this person, then what can, part of what can happen is that we take on some of the issues that the people we're working with have, so that, you know, the energy of their suffering comes to us and then has to be cleared. The other thing that happens is that we get kind of, we sort of start owning the gifts and believing that we have to perform with the gifts. And this is often the way that people with serious psychic gifts or healing gifts get off track. So there are many, many important understandings to have about working with energy. And if you have, or if you know somebody who has these energetic gifts, they can be an enormous blessing. And I would just say, really make your work with these gifts very much an offering to the divine, very much in service, and very much with the recognition that none of it is yours, that it's not you healing, it's the energy herself, as it were, rearranging the molecules in the universe, which she is very capable of doing. And the more you can recognize that and in making a prayer or a blessing for healing, really feel as though the healing, when it comes, is not coming through you, but coming from Spunda herself, coming from that extraordinary power that is pulsating in every molecule of the universe into the person you're trying to help, or into you if you're trying to help yourself. So I hope that helps. And there's a lot to be said about these, you know, about working with healing energies. So that this is just scratching the surface and kind of giving you a sense of how this kind of practice fits in with your sadhana. So thank you, Sharon, for asking. And if there's more, if you need more information, just write us a note and Deb will let me know.
Okay, then next person we have is in North Carolina, I believe.
Okay.
I've unmuted.
Hi, this is Gail in Asheville.
Hi, Gail.
Hi. My question is, when you talked about the Shakti Spanda, how she hides our ability to merge back into, the source, so that we can have a fuller experience of the play. So I guess what I want to know is a couple of questions. One is, well, does the play always go on even after we merge back into this source? Is there a way to keep playing? And people talk about dimensions, and you know, they talk about the fifth dimension being of love, and you know, I think people have said it goes all the way up to 12, maybe way beyond that. So I'm just wondering if there are other dimensions to play in, how does that relate to the merging?
Okay, apparently there are many other dimensions to play in. I don't have firsthand experience of that. So what I'm going to tell you comes from sages that I've read. There's an extremely good explanation of this, or piece about this, in Autobiography of a Yogi. There's a chapter in Autobiography of a Yogi where Yogananda's guru's guru appears to him in a dream or a meditation vision, I can't remember which, and starts to describe the subtle realms, all the different planes on which he has experienced. And one of the things he says is that basically when you have a desire to serve or a dharma to serve, that very often a soul will finish the journey on earth, maybe not even be fully enlightened, but have enough disidentification with with the materiality of the human form, to be able to hold consciousness such that this soul ends up spending a period of time in one of these other dimensions, in which they are able to affect loved ones and students and others in the earth plane and in other realms. So merging, and what he seems to say, and what I've heard from others, especially in the tantric tradition, Abhinavagupta himself wrote about this in certain texts. So when we enter the spiritual path, we enter it with a number of different motives and many different levels and layers of practice. So nobody here is in your first lifetime of practice. Everyone here, in order to be here, has probably had many other lifetimes of being a seeker or being a practitioner. And for most of us, there are many motives and desires in practice, one of which becomes bigger and bigger as we go on the path, is really the desire to help others, to serve others, to make the world better. And in a certain sense, many of us come into this life with an intention to clarify our own psyche, our own path, to let go of the gnarlier aspects of ego, to become clarified, to come in touch with love, very often with the motivation to make a difference from a place of, greater wholeness. So, and those desires are carried on in the post-death experience, and they kind of take us to realms where we can be of service. So what the Hiri Mahasaya, the guru of Yogananda's guru, seems to be saying is that he seems to be talking about what the Buddhists mean when they talk about bodhisattvas, that many, many people in the spiritual path came to the path with the intention to be of benefit, and the desire to merge, the desire to simply become one with everything, is not the strongest desire. But through many, many cycles of practice and service, we wear out any desires that we may have, and merging happens more or less naturally and automatically. So that's how I would answer your question. If your strongest desire is to dissolve into the infinite and you keep up with your practice, then dissolving into the infinite is a very doable option, if you don't mind my using the word doable about something that's actually not done by you. If there are desires in you to be of service or to express some deep longing that you have, then as a result of your practice, you're given means to serve or to express that are increasingly free. So, you get to live in realms where there's enormous freedom. And you may choose to be reborn in a human body and enact that service here in various ways. So it is kind of a mystery, but the point I want to make is that there are many possibilities. So thank you for that question. And if you know the wonderful book by Yogananda Paramahamsa, Autobiography of a Yogi, that is actually one of the best descriptions of the subtle realms that I have ever read.
Yeah. I'll read that, and I really heard you so exactly what I was wanting to hear. So thank you. And service for me really is, I think, this lifetime. And surrender. I really hear that part of this for me is just surrendering and trusting that I'm being guided, and I know that, I see that in my life. So it's just continuing to not to surrender, just to surrender.
Beautiful.
And let myself be of service. So thank you.
That's that's beautiful, and I think probably quite a few people would resonate with that, Gail. So,
yeah.
Thank you, and thank you for the question.
Thank you.
Okay, our next person is in New Mexico. Catherine?
Hi.
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 Oh. Well, this class has been just incredible for me. And the word that I would use, if I were to sum it into one word, is a growing easefulness.
Mm. Mm.
You know, I'm such a type A practitioner. And and the idea that I can actually trust myself to allow the Shakti to guide me. And in
wow.
this class, I had some experiences with that, which don't look at all like I imagined they might. So I'm a little confused, which I guess is good.
Yeah.
Because,
or let's call it not confused, but not knowing.
Okay, that's good.
Innocence, yes.
You kind of touched on what I was going to ask you, which has been a conundrum for me for many years, is my problem with journaling. To put language, so I'm in my experience, I'm having what I'm understanding now is I'm having meditation. I would be a person that said, oh, I'm a terrible meditator. I'm a failure as a meditator. But yet I do it every day. So, But when it comes to journaling, so I come out of meditation and like a good doobie, I pick up my pen and my journal. And what comes out is blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay. It was very nice. Very, very peaceful. And then I go back and I reread it like a good student, you know, once a month. And it's like, okay. But what I heard you say to a previous caller was that you also have had challenge around that. But the very effort of meeting that challenge will teach us what we need to know about that.
Yes, well, yes, you put that very well. So, are you asking the question of how to journal, how to help yourself journal more precisely, or is that the question?
It's kind of like pulling my boots up by myself up by my bootstraps. The
right,
very,
right.
You know, it's very paradoxical to me. And, you know, you tend to be very gentle in your directions, but very specific about, you know, you closed the last homework by saying, and then write about it in your journal.
Right.
So I'm one to... It is part of the conundrum about how to be easeful,
yes,
and still apply effort to that which is challenging for me.
Yeah, I totally get it. So let me
okay.
give you a couple of suggestions,
thank
and
you.
Then and I suggest you try them for a few days and then write me if you're feeling like it's making a difference or not.
Okay.
But one of the ways to jumpstart a journaling practice is to start with a question, and you know, rudimentary basic questions for journaling are: what did I do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what practice did I do? What, if anything, was the experience as I got deeper in meditation? And that would be where you would really, in asking that question, you really go into the place that feels inarticulate or, you know, doesn't have words. which to me feel sort of, it sort of feels like a practice of turning into the field of the mind, you know, which is the source of words and language. In other words, if you turn back on yourself, as a writer, I have to do this over and over again. I'll want to say something. I won't have the words to say it. So I'll turn my attention in, become present to the, you know, what it feels like a blank mind, but what it actually is the kind of pulsing energy field of Spanda that you become aware of when you turn your attention around and just ask, okay, please give me words. And what I find is that if I ask that question, wait a few seconds or a minute, and then just start writing with attention to that inner field, the words start to come. And it's a very interesting thing to experiment with, because what actually many people have, and I certainly have it myself, is an enormous block about expressing very subtle things, you know, whether they're feelings or meditation experiences. Some people really have the gift for eloquence. Some of the people who write in on the listserv really have a gift for describing subtle experience. Most people don't. That's how we develop it.
So I did write. And go ahead.
Yeah. So ask a question. You know, what happened? What was I aware of during meditation? Find a way to ask a question that is expressive, and then start to write. And if you get stuck, turn in, feel the energy space of the Spanda pulsing as your own mind or your own consciousness, and ask, okay, give me some words for this. And by the way, a couple of years ago, I did a month-long private retreat, and one of the practices that I did every day was kind of automatic writing journaling. I would come out of meditation, I would pick up my pen, and I would just start to write. It wasn't always about the meditation. You know, it was often what would come up. And the more I did it with this kind of permission to just write, almost like, you know, like the morning pages exercise that Julia Cameron talks about in her Artist's Way book, which I know many of you are familiar with. You just let yourself write. And when you feel stuck, go back and ask the question inside, into the space.
Yeah.
And I think you'll find there's a wealth of images and words that are, you know, will start to come out, and surprisingly.
Part of the challenge that I bumped into is that there are times, like I offer to share in the listserv about the nature of the ease that I was experiencing. That share was just flowed out of me. You know, I went back, edited it, and like that. But when I do, and I've had a hard time with morning pages because I have an opinion about what it needs to look like. And it needs
right,
to
you
be
have an inner critic. You have a tough inner critic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so you have to tell the inner critic to sit over there and let you write.
Right, give it a banana.
Give it a banana, tell it to go play.
Yeah.
Tell your inner critic that you'll take her help or his help. Very often it's our father. When you need some editing. But right now, you need to just be allowed to be an idiot. Because that's, you know.
I love that. That'll bring delight to what I approach like it's a headache or something.
Oh, I love that. That's so great. That's so great. Well, thank you for that question. It's a fabulous question. And again, it's one of those questions that I think a lot of us have. Mm. So much love.
Yes. We now have someone from Ontario.
Hi.
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 Hello. Hi.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello.
I can.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I'm Jane, and I'm
Hi,
from
Jane.
Toronto. Hi.
Yes.
It's wonderful to connect with you and with everyone. And listening to your answers to the questions that have come up before this, there's always, that will work for me. But I just wanted to pursue this question just in case it sort of shifts things ever so slightly and helps me and someone else. And that is that this particular course has been enormously intense and very uncomfortable, as that gentleman said about discomfort. But it's been amazing in the sense that there's a karmic knot that I've been picking at for years, and I intellectually believe I know what it is. I can sort of trace the storyline, but it certainly has impacted my relationships with the world, my relationship with myself. I don't know. Okay. It's just really in a way that I was raised and in a constant refrain from a parent that when people get to know you, they won't like you. And I grew up with that. And it seems embarrassingly ridiculous to say it out loud right now, but it has totally impacted everything in my life. This particular practice, working with you over the last couple of teleconferences, has really started to unravel this knot. I see it clearly. It's breaking up almost energetically in my consciousness and my body. And it really has released some energy that is a little unwieldy. I just find, that I feel that, particularly as I go out in the world, that there's a surge of intensity, of energy, that it's like I'm driving a Ferrari, and I really can't operate the gear shift. You know, I really do have a bit of a fear of alarming people or hurting people or... I think it also ties in with something you said to someone earlier about oversensitivity or like more sensitivity to what's happening around you. Is this making any kind of sense?
Total sense.
Saying?
Total sense.
Okay.
And by the way, you are so not alone in this.
Yes.
Yes. So it's a great question. So before I start talking, so your question is how to move through the world with
this? And how to move through this. How to hold it, learn to drive it? I don't quite know what I'm trying to say, but really how to move through this where I find myself now.
I just want to say that this, what's happening is that that energies, and you know this, energies that have been really locked up are being freed. And what that means is that you have energy at your disposal that you didn't have before, because, you know, the inhibition mechanism and the story about being unlikable. Was holding you back. So now, as it's starting to dissolve, there's so much more energy, and you actually are going to learn how to manage it by taking chances.
Okay.
You know, and just stepping, you know, putting a foot forward, taking a risk, letting yourself speak in that freedom, and notice that the sensor will come up and say, "Oh, this is going to hurt. You know, this is going to be too much, or this is going to hurt people, or I'm being too frank, or it's not ladylike, whatever your version of that is.
Yes, mostly it's not ladylike. Yes.
Mostly it's not ladylike, yes, yes.
Yes.
So take a little risk, you know, in a situation where you're with people who you know are not gonna, you're not going to lose your job. You know, you're
right.
And notice that the world doesn't come to an end. People don't stop talking to you. That little by little you realize that there, you actually can, you know, you can be, you are, there's an instinct that knows how to move as long as you allow yourself to do it. But don't try to plunge in too hard. Realize that you will take two steps forward and one step back, because that's the way, you know, we enter the world when we have a cautious nature. But just recognize that every step you take, every little risk you take, is going to increase your skill in expressing yourself in this freer way. It's very beautiful. It's very beautiful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's also pay attention to your self-talk. In other words, start to notice that voice which says this is going to be too much or nobody's going to like it. And you know, it's actually very helpful to talk back to your self-talk when these habitual thoughts come up.
Okay.
You know, the Shakti is freeing you, and the mind sometimes lags behind a little bit.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That really is amazing. That is exactly, it perfectly describes how I feel.
Yes, that's so beautiful.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. I can't
Thank
tell
you,
you
so
how well. Grateful I am to have come into contact with you and with the Sangha. I appreciate this work so much. It's been so helpful. And that, I never expected you to say take a risk. So that's incredibly useful. Thank you.
That's so good,
thank
Jane.
You.
And thank you so much. Thank you
Thanks
so much.
Very much. Good night. And
good night. Big love.
Be around.
Bye-bye. Yes. Bye-bye. So we have, I think, one more. We have time for one more, and I think that's Lisa.
Is that me, Lisa?
Yes, I think that's you, Lisa.
Yay! No, I'm so excited. Okay, good. So forgive me if I am being redundant about anything that was spoken about before I got on the call. And part of the reason I was late is what I want to talk to you about. And it's also about, I think, a little bit what the last woman was just speaking of, which is that she says she has this Ferrari-like drive. And that's what it's always been like for me. And when I got on the call, another woman was talking about being of service, and that was where I'm not sure if I'm being redundant or not. But I've always felt this pull, like I'm meant to be doing something bigger and being of service and making a difference. And yet my life has been about kind of cleaning up my past. All these energies. I've been spending my life cleaning up and like finding my way and cleaning up a lot of these energies that you also just spoke of. And so I've been in this struggle of like having this pull to be wanting to make a difference and yet not being able to even find a job that's fulfilling, make enough money for my family. I struggle with like making enough money and whatnot. And then that sends me into further turmoil. And I feel like I'm finally, like my energy is finally releasing. And I feel like some of this really great turmoil I have been through is finally easing up a bit. Yet, I find myself, I just took on I'm doing like menial project management stuff. I'm working all day long. It's like work that I hate it, you know, but I'm like, I feel like there's a bigger picture. I feel like I'm supposed to be doing this and it's going to get me somewhere. But I'm really in kind of a bad place where I'm like, because I used to do facilitation. I have a team building company. I facilitate in groups, yet I haven't been able to make a go of that. And so I'm having to take this kind of day job to work things out. And so I just feel like I should be doing so much more than I'm doing, yet I'm stuck doing, you know, emails all day long, and I'm kind of miserable, but feel like there's a big picture there and I'm getting somewhere. Does that make sense? I just don't know what to do anymore.
It does make sense. It does make sense. And the thing is, there are times in our life when it's like that. And if you have your intention, and it sounds like you have your skill set, you know, you know what it is that you're good at and that you can do. And if you hold the idea that, okay, you need to do this now to for practical reasons, and then start to look at how what you're doing is going to start to make the connections that will let you open up to the greater creativity that you know you have to offer.
Hmm.
I mean, my feeling is, and just speaking about my own life, that much of our capacity to be what we know we can be is a matter of timing. And often in the time before the breakthrough happens, there's this enormous sense of being stuck, of being dissatisfied, of knowing that we have to actually be in the present and approach what we're doing with an attitude of this too is service, this too is mm-hmm. is helpful, you know, which we have to do just in order to, because our life is our practice. Mm-hmm. But you're not giving up your goal, and you're being very alert for opportunities which can start to open those doors. So, I mean, the practicalities of that, I think, is for another kind of discussion.
Hmm.
But there, you know, I think the question is, okay, how can you start to take steps towards what you want, even in this time when it feels as though things are not moving?
Mm-hmm.
So that you're not chafing at the bit, you know, you're not turning your days into you know, experiences of discontentment and unhappiness, and yet you're very poised to lay down the steps that are going to take you to the next phase.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at this point, what you may have to do is lay the stepping stones in place so that you can start to walk over them.
Yes, and I think sometimes too, I think with the facilitation, like some of the things that I've wanted to do with that or thought about that, it has not happened yet. And so a couple of things happen there, is that either I get discouraged or I lose my confidence, or, you know, I lose my desire, and it's kind of a combination of all those things. And
yeah.
So like recently I was like, you know, some of the facilitation I was doing was just with the guy I was working with was not good. And I was like, why am I doing this? You know, why am I here? And so I was like, this situation isn't good. You know, so I'll shift gears and I'll do some project management stuff. And so I feel a little disillusioned. I don't know quite what it is, but I feel like I'm meant to be working on big projects with just impactful people and making a difference. And I have all these different skill sets that I can use that for, yet it hasn't come to me yet. And that's where I'm just like, there's a big, you know, question mark that keeps on out there. And then I do start to feel discouraged because I don't know what I'm going towards.
Well, I you know, the obvious answer to that is to, you know, to actually look at what you're going for. You know, I have a friend who's a very famous actress and very, very talented. And for the first 10 years that she was working, she was always the understudy. And, you know, and she was always discontented about it
mm-hmm.
until the day when there was a huge surge in her where she accepted the fact, I'm not an understudy, I'm a star. It was a very big moment for her. And, you know, it was the beginning of internalizing her gifts.
Mm-hmm.
it happened for her as a result of really not only tuning into, you know, the professional issues, but doing a lot of prayer and a lot of taking refuge in the Shakti, taking refuge in the goddess, and asking for clarity about, you know, what it is, you know, what it was that she was meant to contribute, and then taking that clarity and acting on it. So, and it's step by step, you know.
Mm. And I think that exactly, I have taken a lot of refuge in the goddess, and that's how I've, you know, ended up doing the things that I've been doing, and seeing that this has been so fulfilling in and of itself.
Yeah.
And then when I do ask for clarity, sometimes it's the funniest thing. It's like sometimes I can hear things very clearly, but when it comes to asking about this and so in this area, it's like it just becomes static. It's the weirdest thing, and I try to listen, and it just is like, I can't hear a thing. It's like it's fear. I don't know what it is.
Well, it may be that it's not the time, and it may be that you already know. But what I would suggest is that you try doing automatic writing. In other words, that you sit, you get quiet, you ask the question. And then rather than trying to think about it or expecting the answer to come as a, you know, as a words in your mind, just pick up your pen and start to write and see what comes out. That's actually a very effective process for breaking through the block that sometimes we put on knowledge coming through. Ask her for guidance and start to write. And you may have to do it a few times. And the answer may be you already know. I mean, a lot of the time, you know, we overthink things because we don't want to recognize that the path is actually laid out for us.
Okay.
And, you know, so maybe it's a question of trusting yourself. Maybe it's a question of forgetting about worrying about what the answer is supposed to be, and just noticing what comes out. Maybe it's a question of tuning into the tiny little signals that are pointing you towards the step-by-step process of getting to the place where you realize one day, oh, I am making the contribution I'm meant to be making. Sometimes things change incrementally. Sometimes you have to pray and study very hard. And for most of us, it's a combination of the two.
Hmm.
So I'm just drawn to say to you, when the opportunity comes, it's important to be ready. And my feeling is that this is part of what's happening to get you ready.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Wonderful.
Yes. Yes.
You're just
and
such
you
a
are.
Light.
Well, back at you, and you know, love and blessings. I've been through this myself. I know how it feels, and I know that you come out the other side, and it's way better than you ever thought it could be.
I can tell you've been through it. I can tell by the way you speak, and it sounds. I can hear all that. Oh goodness. Okay. Thank you so much, Sally. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, my dear, and thank you, all of you. We're going to bring this to a close because I know that we promised 1 hour, and I just want to say how much I love being with you on the call and on the listserv and in all the different ways we connect. So the listserv will stay open for another couple of weeks. Available on the listserv. So if you have a question, you can write it into the listserv, or if it feels too personal, you can write it to me. I am going to be giving another class pretty soon. The topic is the Bhagavad Gita, but kind of a tantric, non-dual view of the Bhagavad Gita with emphasis on its amazing practical teachings about how to live our lives, how to act with awareness of the self. So taking the teachings of the Spandakarikas to a you know, the kind of nitty-gritty level that the Bhagavad Gita offers. And you'll all be getting notification about when that starts. I think it's I'm going to start either in early December or in early January, just depending on my schedule and Dev's schedule. But you'll get lots of notice. And why don't we end with a very simple meditation? Just allowing ourselves to settle into our own being with the recognition that Spanda, the divine Shakti, is moving in us through the body, through the sensations of the body, through the sounds we hear, through the thoughts in the mind. Feel your eyes close. Feel the breath moving. And see if you can allow the breath to flow with Om Aim Hrim Klim. Flowing in the mantra, flowing in like light bubbles or light particles to the whole front of your body. And then with the exhalation, feel the Shakti in the breath and the Shakti in the mantra flowing through all the parts of your body that you can be aware of in this moment, knowing that the liberating force of Spanda, the great goddess who lives in every single cell and molecule and quantum particle of this world, and who flows through your awakened breath, your awakened mind, the mantra, and the wisdom that arises through these practices, knowing that she is fully with you, unfolding as your life, liberating you moment by moment. And let the mantra become like the sound of the breath, like the whisper of the goddess through the breath, as she makes love to you, revealing herself through Om Aim Hrim Klim. Have a beautiful evening, a beautiful week. Stay well, be in touch. I love you. Good night.